This is an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The topic is critic, the good, bad, and ugly. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, is credited as being the author of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She actually defers to God and gives God full credit, stating that she is only a scribe and was under the orders of God. This book will be referred to as the textbook. There were 16 other books which she stated were of immense value in explaining and understanding the textbook. She credits them in the same way as the textbook in reference to their true author. In true humility, she states, follow your leader only so far as she follows Christ. She also states, follow my teachings only so far as they follow Christ in word and deed. The textbook begins with these three quotes. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. 2. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. All quotes, unless otherwise designated, are available from viewing the home page of the website with identifying source. She refers to Jesus as the greatest man that ever trod the globe. The term Christ is referred to as a title and as a level of consciousness. The title is used as the same way as a title relates to a classification of a particular name due to entitlement and in reference to a level of consciousness. It refers to the highest level of purity. Therefore, in the absolute sense, it is the consciousness of God. But as with any quality of God, it is infinite in nature, omnipresent, and therefore can be reflected individually. She assigns that title to Jesus, naming him Christ Jesus, because he was the purest example of reflecting the consciousness of God. That aligns with what was said previously, whereby she referred to him as the greatest man that ever trod the globe. He reflected the Christ consciousness throughout his adult life, which was practiced in his healing ministry. In other words, instead of viewing an individual that was having a problem as a mortal, which is subject to sin, sickness, disease, death, he viewed the individual the opposite way, and that was as an innocent, perfect, spiritual image and likeness of God. For example, in the case of Tabitha and Lazarus, whereby all but Jesus viewed them as being dead, but Jesus did not utilize the mortal lens, but the immortal lens of spirit, and therefore viewed them only sleeping. Einstein is credited with the quote, "One cannot solve a problem on the same level from where it was originally discovered." Based on that, Jesus could not have raised those two individuals from the belief of death if he was viewing them on the level of death. He looked through the lens of spirit with every individual he was dealing with that had a problem that needed to be cured. This is applying the God consciousness to an individual by viewing the individual through the lens of spirit, and this is referred to as translation. Mathematics has, which is commonly known to be the 10 digits as elements, and 4 operators, which are named add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Christian Science, which is the system of divine metaphysics, utilizes 7 synonymous terms for God and are stated in definitions of God in the textbook. 1 states God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The other one states, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. She further states the definition of good. God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresent, omniaction. The 4 operators of Christian Science or the system of divine metaphysics are termed the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word represents the facts about God. The Christ, as just noted, is the translation, converting anything that comes to our attention in a visible form from any possible material aspect that is assigned to it to its true spiritual nature. And that, of course, is invisible. What is visible is a symbol, and if it is the opposite of what God represents in his qualities, then one must flip it, just as Jesus did when the appearance was death. He flipped it. Christianity, the 3rd operator, is demonstrating the truth about the situation by utilizing the facts about God, the translation of the Christ, to prove that it is not as it appears to be, and that brings forth healing. Science is the highest level of the 4 operators, and that is where everything is automatic, and we are at the level of translation, which is ascension. Just as mathematics has a variety of levels, so does Christian Science and the System of Divine Metaphysics. Mary Baker Eddy describes these levels in the textbook. The highest level is God, translation of immortal mind, which includes God, man, and idea. And there are three lower levels, and the next level that she presents is the lowest level, which is depravity, and that's translation of mortal mind. The one above that is moral, again, translation of mortal mind. And the highest level of translation of mortal mind, which she calls the third degree, the previous two are the first degree and the second degree. The third degree is spiritual, and as indicated, it is below the absolute level, which was the first one described. There are two very significant quotations by Mary Baker Eddy. One of them says, Christian Science System, and refers to divine metaphysics. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And think of disease as anything with any kind of discord, which means anything that is less than perfect God. The second quote refers to how to demonstrate divine metaphysics. It says, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Einstein made a very significant statement about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. After thoroughly studying the textbook, he said, religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. He further said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. Christian Science was discovered in 1866. So that would have placed his quote at about 1946. Now, the reason he referred to a woman is because a woman could not hold property, could not vote, and had almost no rights that were automatically given to the male gender. In the day of Jesus, they did not even count them when numbering people. For example, when he preached to 4,000 at one time on the hillside and 5,000 at another, it referred to men plus women and children. Mary Baker Eddy stated that there should be equal rights without consideration of gender. And of course, today it very likely has, because there are a large number of major corporations whose CEO is a woman. And the trend has been to increase the female population of controlling large entities and decreasing the male population. Another statement Einstein stated about Mary Baker Eddy in the textbook, he said, blessed art thou, for everything that really is in this book. Imagine that. He devoted his life to exploring everything he could learn about matter, and thinking that that was really the source of the universe, and also the source of what was controlling the universe. So he had a major reversal in thought when he discovered what Christian Science was all about. He had a friend who was on the Atomic Energy Commission, and they, of course, were trying to discover how to destroy civilization on a selective basis. And everyone that served on that commission, except for his friend, Dr. Underwood, passed on as a result of radiation. And when Einstein discovered that his friend was the only one that survived, he was so awakened by the response, because his friend said, "I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy and her writings, and I studied it systematically, methodically, and scientifically." Thereafter, Einstein really dug deeply, attended a local church, and devoted time in the reading room for the serious study of the textbook. The Noah Webster 1828 Dictionary of the American English Language is the one the Mary Baker Eddy Institute uses as a standard, and it often refers to quotations from the Bible in explaining usage of the words. It will be used for the word critic, even though there is no particular reference from the Bible in this definition. Even though critic is commonly thought of as being a negative connotation in referring to the topic in which it is used or applied to, it is really quite generic. As a noun, it is stated as a judge or discerner, to judge, to separate, to distinguish. He says, see the definition of crime. As an adjective, he refers to critical, or the art of judging of the merit. In studying any topic with sincerity, we want to use this idea continuously. Einstein says, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. And think about that first quote of the textbook. It says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So that's what one is searching for every time they're exploring a new topic. That should be the single most important guidepost, searching for truth. One needs to be discerning, separating, distinguishing the difference between what is true and what is false. When one is studying for the purpose of transforming their consciousness to a more spiritual dimension, then they want to be discerning the difference between matter and spirit, the unreal and the real, the mortal versus the immortal. The comparison of those terms were purposely stated in that fashion because what we want to do is we want to elevate from the mortal to the immortal, from the unreal to the real, from the material to the spiritual. And we can't do it by changing, we have to do it by replacing. Just like a mistake in mathematics. One doesn't improve, but they replace the error with the truth. He referred to crime. And if we look at the definition of crime, it is very similar. It says to separate, to judge. So again, we need to be filtering to make sure that we are basing our building blocks on spirit and not matter, on reality, not unreality, on immortal, not mortal. The portion of the title that uses the terms good, bad, and ugly was used in the comedy Western, as the words imply. And by comedy Western, that's exactly what is meant by the way those words are used. But the purpose of using those words in this prayer treatment is basically just a reminder that what appearance indicates could be the total opposite of the truth. And one thing one must do is to always separate anything that is evil from a personality. One can never solve a problem of evil by relying on a personality, because another individual could step into the same shoes and perform the same evil. So evil must be what is resolved, and not trying to justify or condemn or give credit to a personality. So it is good if one acts as a critic, if it is used for the purpose of separating truth from error, what is real versus what is unreal, and so forth. One thing that is very important to understand is how evil operates. One can never get to the truth unless one knows the operation of the opposite, which is the lie. If one knows how evil operates, then recognizing it at the onset of its appearance becomes much more simple. And obviously, terminating the effectiveness of evil at the onset is by far the most opportune time to handle it. It's like accidentally letting an egg drop on the floor. It is much easier to prevent it than to clean up the mess. If we don't take care of evil at the onset, it also opens a door to a Pandora's box. It's like a domino effect. It may be small at the beginning, but if it's not taken care of and it's ignored, it will grow and be much more complicated at a later stage. The relationship between one evil and another one, and the concept of the Pandora's box, is brought out very succinctly by Dr. Fluno in his article entitled Criticism. The present design of the home page includes a column on the left that basically goes from the top, just a little under the very top, down to the bottom, and it lists a number of very important key points about Christian Science. And one thing is under the title of Healing Requirements. Number one, eliminate criticism. Number two, live life of intelligent giving. Number three, humility, no personal ego. The article by Dr. Fluno focuses on the negative aspect of being a critic. In other words, it's not really exploring for truth, but it's just automatically seeing the worst in everyone. And that's what is referred to when we say we must eliminate criticism. He names everything you can think of as a depraved viewpoint about everyone, and how important it is to not even get started, because one depraved thought leads to another. And in essence, if you get into that Pandora's box, you are into a situation where you can't get out. You are living evil. You are seeing only evil. You don't even give truth an opportunity to raise its head to influence you. You just block it out of your consciousness. And that's the kind of a critic that we do not want to be. We want to be a critic where we're searching for truth, not condemning everyone all the time. If one thinks about condemning at all, think about forgiving. Why would one need to give serious consideration to forgiving? Wouldn't one have to condemn before they could forgive? We want to be in the business of thinking, speaking, and acting in a spiritual way. That has nothing to do with condemning. If we're going to reflect the qualities of God, and we realize that God is only good, we have to have a standard that is absolutely perfect, pure, flawless. And we do not let personality enter into the situation at all. We want to embed into our consciousness the facts about God. Not any theory about an Adam and Eve. In Genesis chapter 1, it says, "And God said, let us make man after our image and likeness." That's in verse 26. The very next verse it says, "And so God made man in his image and likeness." The first one, verse 26, is a wake-up call. Are we going to let the truth, the spiritual idea, be the guiding factor or not? The truth is there. God is omnipresent. The laws of God are infinite. There is no other fact. Everything is God, which includes God's manifestation. Over 100 years ago, a real genius of a Christian Scientist, Frederick L. Rawson, was standing next to a friend looking out the window, and this was before motorized trucks were very common, and there was a man that was driving a cart full of rocks being pulled by an animal, and he felt uneasy about something, so he stopped and went back to look at the tailgate. And while he was back there, something alarmed the animal, who raised up and dumped a whole load of rocks on the man. This was observed by Frederick L. Rawson and his friend, and immediately Mr. Rawson stated, "There is nothing but God." With that, the man shot up out from underneath the rocks like a rocket, totally unharmed, not a scratch. Now, he couldn't just say words without having a thorough understanding of what they meant. He obviously knew what they meant, or he couldn't have been involved in an instantaneous healing like that. He was so experienced and expert in understanding about the laws of God and what truth was all about that he discovered how to heal back in time. And he did this over 500 times once he discovered how to do it. And this was not a trick. This was an understanding. This is all explained on the website. Now, what was intended to carry through with a little more detail on evil and how it operates is to realize that evil operates with decoys. It tries to mock truth. It operates on deceit. It operates on distractions. It's like a magician. One is surprised at what they see, which what appears to be reality, but action is taking place when one is distracted. Also, one cannot rule out the possibility of hypnotism being used. There have been cases cited where a magician inquired if there were any Christian scientists in the audience. If a Christian scientist is alert and guarding their thought, it is immune to being hypnotized. Therefore, they would not be seeing what the rest of the audience is seeing, or thinking that they're seeing. Dr. Fluno states in his very first sentence, "Criticism is fault-finding and shuts you out of heaven." He continues, "It will darken all your skies. It will keep you from demonstrating for yourself and others. It will bar you from progress. It leads you into all trouble. It leads you into all discord, into all unkindness, impatience, hard-heartedness, unfriendliness, and finally, into all evil, hatefulness, envy. Just as long as that spirit of criticism remains in your thought and you leave it there, just so long will you not progress. Just so long will you not be able to demonstrate. Just so long will you not be able to find your way in truth, because you will be looking for faults constantly. You are fault-finding on a mortal, material plane." He continues on throughout the whole page and a half with one form of evil after another. They all seem to be connected. The easiest thing is to don't drop the egg on the floor. Watch your thought to not let it enter in the beginning. And don't think about personalities. We must think about only truth and the real manifestation of God, which is the spiritual reflection of God, and not a mortal unlikeness. Mary Baker Eddy points out how important it is to have a standard of a model that one can refer to. And it's easy to build up a model if one just looks and considers the various definitions that are in the textbook. And we have many of them on the home page. Regarding the title, Critic, the Good, Bad, and Ugly, we must remind ourselves that something may appear to be good, but is not. Something may appear to be bad, but is not. and something may appear to be ugly, but the real truth may be totally different. There was a TV show, and they would invite a husband and wife, you know, several of them, and they would introduce the husband and wife to the audience, and then they would separate the husband and wife and put one of them in a soundproof room, and they would ask the one spouse about what they thought about the other one, assuring them that being in the soundproof room, they couldn't hear anything that was being said. They apparently tried to choose couples that appeared to be mismatched. I'd only seen this TV show this one time, and it was many years ago, and I only watched it for a few minutes, so this may not be a good evaluation of the show at all, but what I saw was certainly very clear. And what they did is they, as I mentioned, they introduced the husband and wife to the audience, and then they asked the wife to go into this soundproof room, and then they asked questions to the husband. Now, the husband was a very good-looking man. He had a good physique, athletic type, and the wife was kind of frumpy, dressed with very plain clothes, and she was overweight, but she had a smile. He seemed to be very energetic, but she seemed to be rather tired. So they asked him what he thought of his wife. And he said, "She is the greatest wife anyone could have. She's up before me or the kids are up, preparing everything for the day. She's preparing their lunches to take to school with them, a lunch for me to take. She prepares breakfast, and she gives us words of encouragement as we go out the door. When I come home at night, I've worked hard, and I'm tired, and she does everything possible to make things pleasant for me. I couldn't ask for a better wife. I love her. She's the most beautiful wife anyone could have." The audience was gasping. They couldn't understand what was going on. But his view of his wife was about her spiritual qualities, how she was taking care of the family, how she was being a great homemaker, and really loving the children and him. And so they brought the wife out and put the husband, you know, in the soundproof room. And she said these things about the husband. She said he works very hard. He provides well for the family. We always have money to buy what we need. He never complains about anything. He always looks his best when he goes to work. I think he's a great husband. I don't know how anybody could ask for more than what he provides as being a husband and a provider to the family. They had love for each other, and they were seeing the spiritual qualities in each other. They were seeing the beauty of the spirituality. They weren't looking at a physical appearance, although he had a good physical appearance, but she didn't even talk about that. She was thinking about what he was doing as a father and a husband. And she was very pleased. How are we viewing what we see? Are we looking only on the surface, which is superficial? Or are we looking underneath the surface? Are we taking someone that looks good or someone that looks bad or does a bad act, or somebody that looks ugly? Are we looking only on the surface? What we see is what we are. What we are is what we see. Remember the number two quote, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the first one, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Free of what? Free of a lie. Free of something that is not true. Are we being enslaved to a material sense? Are we really looking for God's true identity and seeing a reflection? That's what Jesus did. Mary Baker Eddy had a student that was working on a vision problem, and she wrote a letter to her and told her about it, and Mary Baker Eddy responded by saying, "Can you focus no matter what comes your way?" One question. That was her response. Can we focus no matter what comes our way? Jesus could. He was a wonderful example. Are we optimistic or pessimistic? And our optimism should be based on facts that we're learning about God, including the fact that He is omnipresent and that He's not a human. He's not limited to a belief of Adam and Eve. He's not worried about, "And there went up a mist," which is in verse 6 of chapter 2. So the whole story of Adam and Eve is subordinate to the atmosphere. In other words, no one can see clearly. We want to be a discerner, being able to separate truth from an error, good from evil, spirit, not matter, love, not hate, vitality in life, not passive and dragging. Thing very important is to realize that there is nothing isolated. Everything is interconnected. Think of a matrix. Think of the seven synonymous terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love as being both the horizontal labels at the top of a matrix and the vertical labels on the far left side of the matrix. And think of just one term that defines mind, intelligence, for example. We need to utilize intelligence as a quality of God that interacts with itself, with spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. In other words, are we in thinking, you know, any mental capacity, any mental activity is mind. Intelligence is a quality of mind. So are we thinking in an intelligent way? Are we intelligent in the way we evaluate substance? How about in the way we identify things, which is soul? Since spirit is the only substance, then the substance of soul must be spirit. And therefore, since soul is the way we identify things, which is by senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste, Are we doing that intelligently? Are we discerning with intelligence so that when we tell the difference between right and wrong, spirit and matter, and anything else that we utilize for identification, are we doing it intelligently? How about principle? Principle is structure. And with that, with a structure, you need a system. And that comes from mind. So are we intelligent the way we are determining the truth about the structure, the principle that is involved in whatever the topic is? Another real fine practitioner was Bicknell Young. He healed himself from being drowned. After he had drowned and been declared dead, he was viewing what was going on with the people looking at his body. They couldn't see him, of course. He was on a different plane of existence at that moment. He had people come to him, and they wanted help in solving business problems. He had to send several of them away because they didn't know how to run their business. That's the first thing they had to do. On a human level, they had to excel. You can't go to the divine level without working out the problem that is visible. You can't love God, which is invisible, if you can't love your neighbor, which is visible. Your friends, your family. Jesus excelled in his humanity. And that's what enabled him to express divinity. Are we intelligent in the way we express the qualities of God in life? Are we intelligent in distinguishing between truth and error so that we stay on the path of truth like a train that stays on its track? And how about love? Is the love an intelligent love or just infatuous and sensual? Is it a lasting love that we're expressing the qualities of? That's just using one term to describe mind. And there's probably 50 or more different words that are used by Mary Baker Eddy to describe mind. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute and her husband, William and Helen Wright. And Helen was an avid writer and researcher, and her husband was involved in another profession. And she studied the textbook and wrote a list of all of the terms that Mary Baker Eddy used to describe the word mind with a capital M, meaning God. And she published a book, really a transcript, of all of the pages of Science and Health that used the word mind. And she did the same with each one of the seven synonymous terms. And she also made an alphabetical list of all the words that Mary Baker Eddy used to describe mind. And she did it with each of the seven synonymous terms. That's on the website. We have a button on the website that says Heal Everything. We give you a detailed description on how to proceed. And it's up to you on whether you're successful or not. If you follow the system that we know works, then you will have success. We know it works because there's 101 pages in the back of the book, the textbook, that is called Fruitage. And there are 85 testifiers that had their healings published in the Christian Science periodicals, and they were all verified. And together, they had an average of just under 6 healings apiece. So there's like 486 healings that were experienced by 85 people. They maybe were attracted to studying Christian Science because they had one problem that they couldn't solve. And while they were advancing their spiritual understanding of what God is and what man is and the relationship between God and man and everything else connected in understanding what Christian Science is all about, they had all these other things that were healed at the same time without even thinking about it. As a matter of fact, that's one of the keys to healing, is to get your thought off of the problem and think about the solution. That means spirit instead of matter. Reality instead of a false estimate of truth. If you take a look at the Heal Everything presentation, you will find that it involves in doing something that you will think is very strange, and that is recording. Recording everything. Recording the original text, recording what your understanding is of it, contemplating it more deeply after you study more and recording that. Because we want to use every one of our senses that we can use. If we record, we're talking. And if we listen, we're hearing. And our mind has to be, or thinking, a clear concept of mind has to be utilized in order to do it all properly. It brings out the best in one's ability to understand. It's like reading something in a book and then you forget it. But if you learn something of value and you start living it, you start doing what you learned, then it's a part of you and you will be developing another dimension of it that is tailored to you. And that's what the whole idea is, to individualize what you're learning and make it applicable on a more tailored basis to yourself. Mary Baker Eddy gave her metaphysical college. That's who I mentioned that, what I mentioned about Dr. Fluino attending. And she gave her final class, which was in 1898. After the third day, an assignment to go out and perform a healing. Of course, it was really truth that was doing the healing, but they were involved, and they all needed to come back the next day and give a report on what their experience was, that they healed. Every single one did it. Now, to be in that class, that was her final class, you had to be invited by her. So she invited her top students. In that class, she gave them 7 special prayers called Diapason of Heaven, one for each of the 7 synonymous terms. I will read one of those to you to close this prayer treatment. And if any additional thought occurs while that is taking place, I will mention something about it after the prayer. And I always say amen at the end of the prayer. So listen for anything after that. And we always put the time and the date at the end for record keeping purposes. So when I say the word the end, that means it's really the end. Here is one of the prayers by Mary Baker Eddy entitled Diapason of Heaven. Because the focus in this prayer treatment has been to make sure that we're looking for truth and not just appearance, because it says the good, bad, and ugly, the Diapason of Heaven for truth will be recited. Diapason of Heaven with a focus on truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. Amen. There is a thought that occurred, and that is that Mary Baker Eddy prayed hourly to self-examine her thought to make sure that she was always responding to any attack on her, which was constant, with the truth about who God is, who man is, and not about a personality. She was always searching to see the good in everyone and every event. And if it was absolutely the opposite, then she would recognize it and flip it. Just like the bad gardener. Two gardeners, each taking care of an estate that had an adjacent property line. And one of them was an expert gardener, and the other one was having trouble. So when he lost a plant, he would go over and steal it from the neighbor. And one day, the good gardener had a friend that came to visit him at the beginning of when he was going out into the garden for the day. And there was a hole. And that was a fresh hole. And apparently the next door neighbor gardener had come over and borrowed one of his plants. So he asked about the hole. He said, the garden is in such excellent condition. How is it that you've got a hole here? Are you waiting for a plant to be available to plant there or what? And he said, no, he said, my best friend apparently needed that and took it for his garden. He said, well, why do you call him your best friend? He said, because he reminds me that I have an opportunity right now to make a decision how I'm going to think about this. Am I going to condemn, find fault with the individual? Or am I going to remind myself of what the true man is? An image and likeness of God. And I choose to do that. So I look at this as a reminder to guard my thought and to make sure I'm always thinking spiritually about everyone and everything. It is Thursday, February 19, 2026, and it's 1400. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on the topic of critic, the good, bad, and ugly. The end.